The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the football show. Conan is here as always. You're always here, Conan. It's very hard to get away from you. Keane Ward, our senior analyst, is back. The John Giles of the GAA Hour.
Senior analyst.
Listen, you've been promoted. Maybe not financially, Keane, but like you've just been promoted this year.
Listen, I'm a martyr. I just love it. Work experience. That's what I'm on.
Now, there's a lot to get through today, and we have to be very fast for a number of reasons. We have to stay within the hour because Padraic Butterley, he tweeted me last night and he says, "Well, Wooly, long-time listener and big fan of the show. A small request. Any chance you could get the football show done first tomorrow? I'm currently travelling in South America and have a 22-hour bus journey ahead of me tomorrow at 3 o'clock Irish time. It would be great if I had the podcast downloaded for the journey." So I feel your pain. There was no podcast in my day when I was in South America. I just had to grin and bear it and use my imagination like children a long time ago. Yeah. But we'll try and get it out. It's 12
You're
o'clock
still using
now.
Your imagination, only in case anyone was wondering.
It's 12 o'clock now. We have a hurling show to do after this. And Padraic, we're right on it. We're going to try and get this football show out. So listen, we have a few incidents to start off with, lads. I'm going to just get these over and done with. Donny Smith, finger in the eye, then dived at the slightest contact from Keith Higgins. Shocking behaviour. Shocking behaviour with the eye gouge and shocking behaviour in another way with the dive. So we don't want to see any of that. I remember Philly McMahon gouging Kieran Donaghy, but Philly McMahon, now Philly obviously was an accident because Philly wasn't even looking. He's the innocence on his face that he was looking wide away, and Philly was able to say, "I wasn't looking, I didn't know where my hand was," and you have to take Philly at his word for that. Donny Smith had a grimace on his face like, "I'm getting it my finger." Like, I mean, Donny Smith can't really say that this was accidental because his face told the story of what he was trying to do. And not only after that, he dived and he tried to simulate and get Higgins sent off. It was just the whole thing. Donny Smith isn't that type of player. Now he is that type of player because he's just done that. Or how many times do you have to do something like this to become this type, that type of player?
Yeah.
It was a nasty thing. I just think incidents like that are just incredibly nasty. And there's nothing manly about it. You know, like, you can have two guys that just get into a bit of an altercation. Like, say, for example, Johnny Cooper and Conor McManus in the Dublin Monaghan game, where they're grabbing a hold of each other, they're wrestling with each other, but it's man on man. A bit of messing. And
that was funny, actually.
Yeah, it was. And just get on with it. But like, this is a situation where a player is holding the ball in his hand, and another guy is behind them raking his eyes. I mean, I can't even understand how you would go about doing that. Just doesn't. I don't get it. Like,
it's totally not weird. In our day now. That didn't happen in our day.
It's just not a natural thing to do. But it's hard for any eye gouge to sort of say it was an accident, because it's not a reaction to anything. It's not a natural thing. Like, sometimes.
But you can't even claim you're going for the ball. I mean, nobody holds the ball with their nose.
Like. Your hand has no business there. Now, neither manager said they saw it. Anthony Cunningham said he didn't see it, and James Horne said he didn't see it, and I believe both of them because they're on the stand side, and this happened with Smith's back to them.
It does happen very quickly, but I think Keith Higgins should be commended for the restraint he showed, because in a situation like that, I think it would be very, very hard for a player to hold their cool. Now, he did get up and he did react in a certain way, but you know, you can kind of almost, I would, it's not within the rules, of course, but you can almost understand the reaction from a player when something like that does happen to them, because when your defence is like a guy who's lying on the ground and something is done to them, like, that can completely incense teammates and the player themselves, because you are defenceless and you're left wide open to get pretty serious injury, and gouging a guy's eye is really nasty act. And it probably is surprising to see sort of a stylish player like Donny Smith do it, but I suppose
it is disappointing because he's
a good
player.
Disappointing because I did like him, and now I don't really like him
anymore. Me too. Well, I've soured on him definitely, and he is a player I liked, and it wasn't always starting, and I was often thinking, geez, he's well worth his place. He's smart, he gives a nice ball in, and he can score. I saw a good few people giving out about the managers not saying they saw it, and like I was saying, I believed him that they didn't see it. Yeah. And Anthony Cunningham, in fairness, said to him, "We wouldn't promote or endorse that type of behaviour." Obviously, if that's what happened, this has been in the context of that. But I saw Ewan McKenna on Twitter complaining about it and saying that the reporter, the interviewer, should have a laptop and show him the clip. But then again, the way I think people read too much into that, what difference is that going to make?
Yeah.
Smith didn't get a yellow card for it. He's going to be done. What difference does it make? Anthony Cunningham can't come out and slate him. It's just not fair on him. Like, I mean, James Horan has to, like, why are people so obsessed about whether a manager says he saw it or not? Like, who cares?
Well, I don't care, so can we stop talking about it?
Yeah, but the cameras saw it. That's the main thing. But you mentioned a second ago about players lying on the ground and how that's dirty, because Jack McCarron, he's a very, very lucky boy that he got a yellow card for this. And how the referee, if he saw this, can only give a yellow card for it, it's a straight red. He saw what he was doing, his head is down, Small is completely defenceless on the ground, and he drove through him with his knee. That was another disgusting thing to do, and like, he's very, very lucky nothing can happen to him now because he's on a yellow.
And also he took a fall after Brian Fenton came over and confronted him with a push in the arm and he fell over.
That's a fall of guilt, isn't it? Like, McCarron was doing a bit of simulation yesterday. He got Small a black card for absolutely nothing, for diving forward when all Small was doing was trying to grapple to get that in at the ball. That was no black card, but McCarron was making sure he was getting the black by actually diving forward when Small was pulling him back by the shoulder. Like, it wasn't a natural kind of fall for what John Small was doing.
Yeah, the knee was like, it was very hard to look at, but is there this sort of bad culture now in the game where,
I think diving is creeping in.
But not even diving, but just this idea that you have to leave a bit in. Like, you know, how many times have we all sat in dressing rooms where it's like, right, you need to be up for this one today, you're going to take a belt, you're going to hear all sorts. Like, that's sort of part of your preparation for a game, and this whole thing is bigger than Jack McCarron and Donny Smith, I think. Like, you know, there is an idea out there, let them feel it. Like, you know, leave a bit in on them, and sometimes that overspills where it's a knee to somebody's head.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's going on a long time, and we'll move on from that, because there's another thing I want to talk about this sin bin. And the sin bin is a breath of fresh air. It's fantastic, it's brilliant. So Colin Boyle got one, and it was the most blatant one ever. The two Dublin black cards were not black cards, they're bad tackles. What's the line between a tackle, that a foul from a tackle in a dangerous position, and a cynical black card pull down? There has to be you have to distinguish between these two. Both Dublin players fouled their man. That's not a black card. Just because McCarron's in on goal, you can still foul him, you know. And actually, Small was kind of trying to get in at him. He'd a yard on him.
I actually didn't even think that Small intentionally fouled him. I thought it was just
trying to get the hand in at him.
Desperate tackle.
Yeah.
And McCarron, if you watch the replay, and it's easy to see on a replay, I mean, he just straightened his legs and fell forward.
Yeah.
I mean, it was completely unnatural movement from McCarron. You can call it clever play, and players will try and take any advantage, but I was totally confused after the Dublin black cards. I thought that the rules had changed, that the black card was now something totally different because it had gone to Simbin, and I realised it's not, and I was thinking, well, neither of those were black cards. So, strange one. It's a good punishment. It's a really good punishment.
Brilliant punishment.
And it would be a great, an even better punishment if the team that was down a man couldn't just hand pass the ball around for 10 minutes.
Well, here's the thing now, and that's a point I want to make, and I don't want to forget the other things, so keep me reminded about, no, I'll say about staying warm. It's first here in my notes. So John Small gets sent off, right? So this will tell you how inexperienced, even for a setup like Dublin. I couldn't believe it. So he goes up and sits in the stand in the freezing cold weather. Brian Cullen's two lads across from him, and Small is handed a bib, an aluminous bib. So he's sitting there in the cold for 10 minutes. Like, I mean, surely the thing to do there is to stay up and down, limbering up, like you're still in the game.
I think with 4 minutes to go, he was told, he was given a bib to go back down and warm up before he came back on.
Was that it?
So I think he did have a break, which maybe he should just be jogging
for
10 minutes.
I don't think you should get any break. You should, even if it's not jogging for 10 minutes, it's staying loose.
I'd be happy enough to have the break now.
Depending on what stage you're sent off for. But like, I mean, that's one thing I think teams will have to get better at when this sin bin, and I'm so livid I keep saying that these rules should be in for the championship. They're all working so far perfectly, and that's grand. But here's the thing about everyone complaining about going back to the goalkeeper, and this incensed me watching it last night, because this is Joe Brolly with this don't go back to the goalkeeper rule that Stephen O'Mara tagged him in a thing on Twitter and tagged me on it. So Stephen O'Mara's idea, I hadn't really thought about it. So Brolly's claiming then in the Irish Independent that it's his idea. So he's trying to go on about this last night. You have to remember, if Dublin are down to 14 men and they want to pass back to the goalkeeper, Monaghan have an extra man. Where is he? Why is he not pushed up on that goalkeeper? Why is the tactics, if you have an extra man and the others are down to 14, are you not saying, right, everyone man up on their man, we will make the most of our extra man, like they do in rugby. What did you get in your 10-minute sin bin? Did they make the most of it? How are you going to make the most of it if you won't even push up on that goalkeeper? So Dublin went back to Comerford. Comerford took a few solos with it, and Monaghan's extra man must have been back in the defence. That's Monaghan's fault, not the rules' fault, right? So there's ways around this. And the way I'm looking at it, if you push your man right up on that goalkeeper, your extra man, right, put the goalkeeper under loads of pressure, if that goalkeeper's kick doesn't find a man, there's a turnover, goalkeeper has to run back into his goals, you have a man straight on his own, unmarked, in front of the goals. So this is a tactical issue here that's going to... It will be ironed out over the league. But like a minute there's a sin bin, immediately Malik O'Rourke has to say, lads, sin bin, push up.
Will you push everybody up on Dublin?
Absolutely, but you have an extra man.
But it won't... Like, Dublin's very easy. Like, Niall Scully could just turn someone and then suddenly they've got an extra man. Do you know what? That's the worry of pushing up on Dublin.
Yeah, but I think you have to when you've the extra man. Like, who dares wins,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, it does go back to the question of what your team style is, and it will change given the circumstances of the game. So Dublin, you know, Dublin play a possession-based game. They have done for the last number of seasons. So they're completely comfortable even the man down, and they'll use their goalkeeper. And to be fair, most teams at county level play a very much a possession-based game now. Some people and a lot of spectators find that boring to watch. You know, and that, you know, it goes back to the whole rule thing, and they're trying to bring in different rules to create more contests and more turnovers of possession. But each team is... If you're on a team and you're a man down, you're going to hold possession. You're going to work the opportunity. There's a risk for Monaghan or any team that has an extra player to push on. And the risk is that... That's actually what the team holding possession want. They always want that. Dublin hold possession around the middle third. They'll go backwards to try and draw you out onto them. And then it'll be create a one-on-one situation for one of their players in the middle sector of the field. And then they're all running off the shoulder. And then they have the overlap. So sometimes when you have the extra man, you know, you maybe just have to be patient. I can understand it. My instinct naturally would be, you know, get pressure on the ball. Everybody press onto a man. If everybody's pressed onto a man, the ball carrier shouldn't have an easy option. He should always have to move it to a contest.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you have an extra player, that should be, you should be making it much harder.
Yeah.
But players are so comfortable on the ball now. I personally, if I was standing in my own half back line and there was only one guy coming to me, he'd never take the ball off me. You'd always be able to move the right direction. You know, play it back to your goalkeeper. So it's very difficult to turn over possession in one-on-one. But I can understand that it is a risk-reward thing.
It is, and it's only for 10 minutes. And you will never, if you play a defensive style of football, you'll never make the most of that extra man because you're kind of giving the other team one.
Correct.
It's all a mindset. And I actually think this sin bin, based on yesterday and the advance mark, is enough to change the game, but it's a mindset. All the copycats have to see this in action, and that's the way it is. So, like, I'd be positive enough. Interestingly enough, Jim Gavin came out about the new rules yesterday, and he says, I've no issue with them at all. I probably would have suggested to just get on with it and put them in for the league. If the governing body decides to change the rules of the game, I don't think managers should have a soapbox to change them either way. It's exactly what I said here last week. Like, I'm delighted Jim Gavin came out about it. Now, it's interesting Jim Gavin
is
saying...
Jim Gavin is the PR master, though.
Jim Gavin is saying this now that the hand pass has been thrown out and these are only being trialled. Jim Gavin was very silent on this. Am I being cynical here?
No, but he's following through on what he's saying, which is, look, I'm a manager. I just try and prepare my team.
Oh,
I don't care
right.
what the rules are. And he is right.
And you have to say that a lot of these rules would probably punish Dublin's new style of how they actually counteract these defensive systems. And Jim Gavin is saying this, and he deserves a huge amount of credit for this. Like, I mean, he's the biggest, best manager at the moment in the game. And he's just saying something really logical and saying, there's a bigger picture here. And I'm not the bigger picture, and Dublin isn't, and nobody else is. But there's too many managers over the last while thinking that they are.
McGavin did have a complaint as well. He said he doesn't like the idea that it's sort of murdering hurling. He said it's two different games. He did elaborate then on that interview, and he seemed to be sort of having a bit of a complaint.
Whether he likes them or not, he's saying that he's happy for them to come in, which is not what a lot of the others are saying. You know, they're actually spitting the dummy out completely. Like, you can disagree with them, but you can also say, I have to live with them. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's a different attitude.
Everybody eventually gets to that point. When a rule comes in, coaches will automatically, over time, get used to them and just get on with it. That's just what happens, because the job of the manager and the coach is to prepare the team as best they can within the rules of the game. So if the rules of the game change, then automatically that may have an impact on how a team is coached, or it might not, depending on the rule. I think it was very difficult for any of these guys, particularly at inter-county level, where there's a huge pressure on and they actually didn't even know what was happening, what was coming in, what wasn't coming in. It needed to be a little bit clearer. Like, I thought it was clear, you know, that these rules were coming in for the league and that was it. And then, you know, you have this U-turn on the hand pass rule, which to me takes... there was a huge amount of work went into formulating these rules for people, whether we agree with them or not, or we have our views on them. But you can't form an opinion on a rule, really, until you've seen it in practice over a number of games. Like, we could sit here debating the different rules that came in or throw out some
ideas. We've done it, Keane. We've done it.
But, like, we're doing it forever. And then we finally get a chance to evaluate a couple of rules, whether we like them or not, to just see, does it make a difference?
Yeah.
And I thought that it would have been a very, very valuable exercise. And it's very, very disappointing because now we have years to wait. And I watched 3 inter-county games this weekend, playing the club match myself. Incessant hand passing ruins the game to play and it ruins the game to watch.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. When you're, like, fair enough, when you're playing on a team, you do what needs to be done to try and win the game. But as a spectacle, incessant hand passing is not...
It's horrific.
Yeah, it's
horrific.
Not enjoyable.
Another quick one here, because I'm sure you were in this situation. Jack McCarron got a goal yesterday, a free that was brought up, and he scored from the right spot. No reason for that to be disallowed, was there? Or does the referee, like a penalty in soccer, does he have to give you a little toot to say you're ready to go?
Well, it's happened to me in a club game where I've taken a quick free like that and scored a goal, and the referee is telling me you can't take a 14-metre free quickly. Now, I don't know whether that's in the rule book or not, but that's what the referee told to me. And
right. It
probably was David Coldrick, given he's a referee for Meath, and he prevented the goal going in the other day. So
he got injured for his trouble then too.
Yeah, I don't know if it is a rule, but I didn't see a lot wrong with it. And I think it was a good bit of quick thinking from Jack McCarron. He was sharper than the defenders and the goalkeeper. And I think that sort of ingenuity should be rewarded.
I think so. So that Fermanagh, or that Monaghan-Dublin game, was a brilliant game to watch, and we'll talk about that in part two. There was some other games around the country that weren't as good to watch. Meath, Tipperary is a bit of a bore fest. Fermanagh-Cork, hilariously, Tyrone and Kerry. Tyrone will just never change. We'll talk about that in part two as well. But Fermanagh, I thought this was funny from Declan Bogue's match report in the 42. So he says, those paying the full whack of £19 into this game may not have been able to believe their eyes as the home side went the entire first half without scoring from play. Then Fermanagh in the second half got a couple of scores from half backs or from the middle third lads. He says that such deep lying players were able to do so was down to the depth of attack. In layman's term, the home side had nobody up front in the first half, as in nobody. The odd thing was, neither did Cork, as both pulled 15 men back behind the ball, making a deeply unsatisfactory contest to football. Christ almighty, now there was a wind, and I have a little bit of sympathy of teams doing all that against the wind. Roscommon did it with the wind. One point I would make about that, this is from reading match reports and seeing the Roscommon Mayo game. Cork and Roscommon would have been two of the more attacking minded teams, and they both got destroyed by Tyrone last year. They got destroyed by Tyrone last year because they didn't match them, they didn't follow the runners. But now they've almost said, if you can't beat them, that the reason we lost to them is because we don't camp our men in outside our 45. So now Roscommon and Cork are just two more teams to add into the into the one forward. And it's just like, oh, Jesus Christ, here we go now.
Tomas Corrigan's a very happy man out travelling around the world.
He's in South America, yeah. He'll never come back. Never come back. But yeah, that's the way it is. Two standout results, lads, before we move on into part two. Leitrim Rising, we call this... We called it. In Terry Highland we trust. Leitrim 3-15, Wexford 11 points. Wexford dominated the first half, and Leitrim were lucky just to be 7-6 down at half time. But then they got two goals out of nothing, two point attempts that fell short. And we know how dangerous point attempts that fall short are. Everybody switches off, or a ball off the post or the crossbar, bang, you have a goal. Two easy goals, and then they outscored Wexford 3-9 to 4 points in the second half. So 3-15 to Wexford. It's an astonishing home result for Leitrim, who are building on last year's home qualifier win against Louth, have a new manager. We talked about that last Thursday. And listen, especially in these weaker counties, you can't underestimate what a manager coming in with a fresh approach, a professional system. And look, if Leitrim are playing the Carlow defensive system to get out of Division 4, I don't have a problem with that. And I'm sure they are under Terry Highland. But, like, I mean, more power to them. That's a great result for them.
Yeah, 3.15 is a fair tally as well to be scoring in your first league game on the at the end of January. So, look, having not seen the game, you're looking at a scoreline saying 3.15 is very good scoring, and they must have done a lot of good things right up front.
Yeah, definitely. A game of two halves. The other one was Westmead, 11-3 down, up with 9 minutes into the second half. Westmead, I'm telling you one thing, when they get their tails up, I've always said this about Westmead, they have something about them. And Mead will remember it in 2015 in Croke Park, that game was over at half time. But they have something, Westmead, when they get going and a roll and the crowd get behind them, because they're well supported. So they were 11-3 down and they were looking like it was going to be a disaster. They scored 10 of the final 11 points, 9 in a row. Now, obviously, there was a big wind in a lot of these games. And what it does annoy me in match reports, and I, during the Monaghan-Dublin game yesterday, I turned down the volume on the TV and I turned on Radio 1 and they went around to all the grounds and it was brilliant. And it's astonishing how many reporters don't say, they could say it's 9-2 up now at the moment and they're playing really well. With the advantage of a gale force wind, but that doesn't seem to be included.
They're playing with the advantage of a hurricane, so they're doing all right.
So, like, don't go to the bookies and rush in on anything, because this will easily turn around in the second half. And it's just, they never put it in. They never just say, this is in the context of a massive wind that's really affecting the outcome of this halftime scoreline.
This isn't what you think it is. Like, I saw the Derry report at halftime against Antrim and they were 7 up or something. I thought, ah, brilliant. So it went away and found out they got in the last minute score to win it in the end by 1 point.
It's unbelievable. So 11-3 down. Like, there obviously was a strong wind in Tullamore here. So you're looking at 11-3. You still think they're gone at 11-3, even though if there is a strong wind. But, like, I mean, that's just another gripe. Quickly now, have you anything to say on that there?
It's just an interesting victory for Westmead with Jack Cooney, and he has Pascal Keelan involved in his backroom team, who would obviously know Offaly football inside out, having been involved with Road the last couple of years. So,
Was Jack Cooney? Pascal would know that.
Yeah, and Jack Cooney was with him in Road. So,
was Jack Cooney in Road too?
Yeah. So very interesting sort of, I'd say Pascal was sneaking in there and keeping the head low. But look, Westmead have started the season really well under new management.
Without Heslin.
Without Heslin, who's obviously a major loss to them, but they'll be looking to get promotion this year. And that was a tough opener for them, like a kind of a local derby there, away from home, your first day out. So look, they'll be pleased, and the manner of the victory as well.
Yeah.
What is it there? 10 of the last 11 points they got.
Yeah, 10 of the last 11 points. That's it.
It shows a fair bit of character.
When Westmead start coming back, you're gone. That's basically it. So quickly before we start part two, the media watch. League Sunday was very good, I thought, last night. The packages needed a bit of work, the actual narrated packages. I thought Joanne was excellent. She pulled Joe Brolly up, who really has come so late to this rule change thing. Like, we talked about rule changes last August, before the committee was actually going to sit down, and you might think you might be able to influence them or whatever. He is waiting for the rules to actually come in. They're going to be trialled. Then he starts writing about ones he wants to make up and ones that he's robbed off other people. So, like, it wasn't a time last night for him to start talking about rules. Last night was a time to talk about the rules that are in and how we can work with them and how they might improve the game. And it was actually during a chat about Kerry that he started talking about this. Like Leicester would have let him on, but Joanne, and it made a bit awkward viewing, but Joanne was absolutely right. Either put a bit of structure on this and talk about what's going on. Mm. It's not an opportunity to talk about rules that are completely irrelevant because they're not in. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. What's the point of starting to talk about stuff like that?
Yeah, well, look, I didn't see it, but really a highlight show is not, it's not the forum for broad range of discussions. It's analyse what was seen as much as they can, because look, there's that many games and how could you see them all?
Yeah, no, definitely. And they showed Cork Kilkenny in the hurling, which wasn't on television, which in previous years they were just dialing it in and they were showing the games on TG Cahir and Air Sport and just sending nothing themselves. But there's a definite, it was fresh last night. I thought the highlights were good. The packages weren't great, but that's the actual individual person doing them, maybe, or whatever. But at the same time, I thought it was really good and it was an improvement. They did a lot of the top level games. Maybe next week they could choose a game from Division 2 and focus on that.
Or get a separate show or something, or somebody else coming. Yeah.
Hopefully Donegal Mead, so I don't have to Donegal travel to Ballybuffet.
That's on in Ballybuffet, but that's the one I picked out. So like, they could focus on sending a crew to that and then have Division 2 covered for a week or two. It's just to keep everybody quiet. Because you can't please everyone in the time they have. Like, it's impossible. But like, then third week maybe pick Leash versus Carlo, for example, in Division 3. You know what I mean? Because there'd be interest, that would be interesting in its own way. And then just keep everyone in every division a little bit happy. Play the politics of it.
Because even like it was an hour and 45 minutes last night, and that was the gripe then. Like, Joanne was great. The highlights were much better, but it was after an hour and 45 minutes, we couldn't tell that there was other divisions in either hurling or football, you know, so that was the one thing people.
And they have to get Leitrim Rising in, because we were right behind Leitrim. Yeah.
And look, to be fair, probably all people want to see is a few scores from their county's games. They don't care about analysis, they just want to see who scored and a couple of minutes of clips from it. That's really all people want on a Sunday evening.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll come back next with a little bit of analysis. Happiness hit her like a train on a train.
I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers.
Okay, so Monaghan. Thank God Monaghan won, or we would have had to suspend the podcast, which we said last week that if Monaghan and All-Ireland semi-finalist can't beat an understrength Dublin at home in the first round of the league when Dublin are just back from holidays, well then we're suspending the podcast. And we didn't, because Monaghan won the game.
And you called it, Willie?
I thought Dublin played some of the better football. I thought Monaghan dug it out. When the lads came on late in the game, they used the offensive mark really well, and Monaghan played very well, I thought, in the second half. I thought they were just hanging in there in the first half, and like, I thought Mannion was excellent in the first half. Some of his distribution was really good. Even the first score of the second half for Dean Rock, it was a beautiful ball by Mannion. I'm starting to think Mannion now has maybe a place at centre half forward or something like that, because he's more vision than I gave him credit for. But it was a brilliant game, loads of kick passing, really enjoyable, lovely conditions, lovely pitch, great crowd, and it was a proper good league game.
Yeah, it was really an excellent game, and the quality on display, particularly from Dublin in the first half, early in the first half, was a joy to watch at times with the use of the foot pass.
Were they bringing that back? Because maybe Monaghan allowed it. Dublin will play the kick pass if it's on. It's just against teams that they know it's not on. They play this terrible old hand passing game.
It was a reasonably open game because, you know, there was a lot of good kind of man-to-man contests across the field, and Tom Niall Scully had a very good game for Dublin. He dictated a lot of the good things they did. Howard obviously dropping into the pocket and just retaining possession. Fenton looks to kick the ball. Scully looks to kick the ball when it's on.
They do.
And to me, I mean, that's kind of what set them apart in the first half, was that they had really good movement from the inside line in Costello, Mannion and Rock, and the guys were getting their head up early, creating a bit of space and popping it in. And there was some brilliant moves where they had maybe two or three kick passes in move where they changed the angle of the attack. It went from one wing to the other and then back again and created brilliant scoring opportunities, and very enjoyable to watch. They weren't going to be able to sustain that for the duration of the game with wind conditions, and also the fact that, look, they're fairly undercooked in terms of their training as well. But they did look quite sharp when they had the running in the legs early on in the first half. But Monaghan deserve huge credit, because they just do what Monaghan always do, and that's, you know, gradually work their way and grind their way into the game and come up with good scores the opposite end of the field, capitalise on mistakes, and they bring great intensity all the time to their play in terms of making it really, really difficult for their opponents all the time. It's always a real contest when Monaghan play.
They wore Dublin down rather than the other way around.
Yeah, they really did. Yeah. And as you say, they got some good scores in the first half when they needed them, just to keep themselves in contention. And in the second half, I thought they did really well to capitalise up front on the opportunities that they did create. I thought Jack McCarron had a really good game, particularly in the second half, in terms of his he was coming out on the loop and he was playing some lovely ball into their forwards, and I was surprised that he actually didn't get man of the match. I thought he had a sort of a bigger influence on the outcome of the game than Fintan Kelly. But
Fintan Kelly looked like he man-marked Fenton. Maybe that's what
he
did.
Yeah, look, he tried to, but Fenton still was able to drop the shoulder and have a fair influence in the game. So
I thought Kelly struggled for at least a half on Fenton, like really struggled. Like Fenton was still just dominating, like, you know.
Yeah, he was going man to man with him, and he was putting him under pressure and making life difficult. But Fenton, you know, really, when he you know, when he drops the shoulder and steps away from a guy, I mean, Kelly was pawing at him and putting him under pressure, but Fenton was still, he still looked like he was at his ease. So yeah, it was a bit of a strange with me, but in fairness to Kelly, he did kick a point himself in the first half, and he did influence the game in terms of just, I suppose, trying to limit Fenton's involvement in the game. I think Fenton might have got 2 points from play, and he was on a bit of ball. But
yeah, he got one here according to this match.
Only one. So look, Fenton would usually on last year's league form, he was kicking, you know, at least two from play, maybe three, sometimes four in games. So he curbed his influence slightly.
He set up the goal as well. Like, you know, when it was, he's just going and getting kickouts and just always just, almost like Roy Keane, just always coming up like a brick wall up the pitch. Like,
Fenton.
You know, yeah, wherever.
He's so positive when he gets the ball. He's such a brilliant player. Yeah. Like, I mean, he's such a, and the kick pass, he's always using it.
He always looks forward and looks to deliver, looks to hurt the opposition. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of players get the ball and they just get it to give it back to the guy they just took it from. Yeah. And look, that's fair enough. They have their, you know, players have their limitations and know what they can do and what they can't do. But, you know, it's really the likes of, like, even Howard there. Howard is, he's swanning around, giving little sidesteps in back in his own half back line, not really doing anything, retaining possession. And there's a function for that. But it was Scully and it was Fenton that were making things happen for Dublin. Yeah. Scully was taking men on and delivering good ball inside.
I think
inside.
It was Scully gave one ball down under the stand to Mannion. It was one of Dublin's first scores and Mannion got it out on the sideline around the 45 and immediately turned around and whipped in a diagonal ball around the top of the D, which Dean Rock came out for. And then he laid it off to Costello and Costello's shot wasn't on, gave it back to Rock over the bar.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant score.
You can't underestimate the way these balls from the wing in around the D. When you collect that ball, instead of collecting it in the corner with a man behind you, you're collecting that ball with a man behind you. You're on the D. You've left right for pop passes. You've turned dummy solo. There is no option as a forward you don't have if you get the ball diagonally around the D. It's the perfect ball. Now, obviously, that's why a lot of teams play a sweeper there. But if the diagonal ball is good, it could go over the sweeper's head, or like sweeper can't cover two good runs. But just, it's so, I see it very underused by teams. And especially with this offensive mark now, we saw Monaghan towards the end when McManus came on and he was able to mark somebody's diagonal balls. Like, I mean, it's a huge, huge weapon to just get out in front. Dublin actually play you from the front, so you can actually take a run from behind your man across the field, which Dublin, it's very difficult, and these diagonal balls finding you on your chest, mark, bang.
Well, the most dangerous movement really from an inside forward is the lateral movement across
running
the field.
Away from the ball.
Yeah, like if you're starting in left corner forward, moving towards the centre when that space is cleared out by a full forward, or moving to the far side of the field, because no matter what, if you're in front of your defender moving across the field, there's an ocean of space usually that the kicker can hit that gives you the advantage to win the ball. For forwards, if they're coming out in a straight line run out the field, very easy for a defender, because shoving the back, nudging the back, the ball breaks loose and then a half back picks it up. You know, it's much more difficult to play. And even when you get it out there, you're no threat. You're absolutely no threat. So that sort of lateral movement. But you need kick passing and you need guys out the field who are willing to take the risk. The problem that I would see a lot with the game is that there's nobody takes the risk with the kick pass, either because they don't have confidence in their own ability, or just that the ethos is such that with all these teams it's possession,
this could go astray. Yeah.
And I know it's difficult at this time of the year with wind conditions and different things, but you know, people have to have confidence at intercounty level. You should be able to kick a 40-metre ball cross field. You just have to hit a zone. It doesn't even have to hit a guy in his hands. I can't understand it, because all you're doing is keeping possession in the middle of the field, allowing the opposition to get back, wasting your own time and making it much more difficult to get a score. The best opportunities that teams have to score is when they're transferring the ball quickly, and the quickest way the ball can be transferred is by the foot. With the way the kickouts have gone, like even Dublin in the first half, I mean, they got a score just straight from a kickout, tap over the top, very much like Donegal were doing and Monaghan have done in the past, and they're breaking forward on the opposition because they've sucked them onto them. Now, Darren Hughes probably in the second half covered the spaces a little bit better for Monaghan, and that's why they probably dropped back that little bit deeper, because they didn't want to leave those spaces that they left in the first half. But there still were occasions where Paddy Andrews won ball out in front, and those kicking opportunities for Dublin were on when they looked for them.
Yeah.
But Dublin are the reason Dublin are a top team is because they look for that.
Yeah. They do. They're very positive. They're a real positive. They're a kicking team. And these new rules would have suited Dublin. I see some people saying that they wouldn't have suited Dublin. They absolutely would. Like, good players and good kickers, which Dublin have all over the field, would have that. But the thing about this offensive mark, lads, is that the whole idea of this is to give, like, and I'm going to say it again, it was my idea for the offensive mark. And I think anybody that talks about the offensive mark in future has to put it in the context that this is Colin Parkinson's rule.
Asterisks beside every report.
As taught up of. The brainchild of... but anyways, but the whole idea behind this was, when I was getting pissed off of defensive football, it was, how can we get the power back? This was before the mark of midfield. How can a forward get rewarded and not get swarmed? That all the aces are in for defenders. So now Conor McManus has a break and a catch, and the two lads that will be chasing him are redundant now, because you've done your hard work and now you can swing it over, and he'll swing it over. Now, I was against coming out to the 45, but now I'm happy with it, because I think my one at the 21, by the time the ball flights out, say you start your run at the very end line, and by the time the ball gets into you, you're very close to that 21. Now, I do accept that now, and that's fair enough, but I think if a mark is taken around the 45, I disagree with that. But there's very few players will take the mark there, because it's too difficult to shot, right? So the only lads that would maybe take one there is Dean Rock or Conor McManus, but they've no business out there, so they'll very rarely be out there. So if a ball is caught just inside the 45, they'll probably continue on. It's only if they're caught in around the D, which is outside my 21, they can still mark that. So I, in actual fact, I think the 45 extension absolutely works.
Yeah, like Bannigan and Garland, they're full forward from Monaghan, and they both won two marks, but they're about 38 metres out, and they should have just played on, but both of them took their free and both of them hit them wide.
And they'll learn from that. Yeah. Like, teams will see that like your normal wing forward won't kick a 45 from any bit of an angle.
Because originally I'd be looking at that going, oh, that's a stupid rule, but now I'm just like, why are they stopping? Just play on, just keep playing football. Yeah. Like, and then the difference is that somebody like O'Hanlon can come on and just forget about the mark. I can keep playing here. You don't have to stop every time you hear that whistle, and that's the important thing.
Yeah. Well, the beauty for me of the mark is that it rewards the two hardest skills in the game, which is a long kick pass and being able to take a ball first time under pressure. You know, they're the two hardest things to do. Anybody can hand pass the ball.
Yeah,
you could get the worst players in Ireland, and you would be able to create a functional team because you would just make sure that they never kick the ball.
I have said on record that I could get the Leinster rugby team, the backs, the lads with a bit of mobility, and coach them to keep a really good team down to under 10 points. That's the, like, lads that never played football. Once you've strength, you can hold someone up, and you've got strength in numbers. You don't have to be a good Gaelic footballer. No, like,
absolutely.
It's gone. But anyways, listen, we'll move on from that. I don't know what to say, lads, about Mayo Roscommon. I've nothing really to say about it, because outside of Roscommon's tactics just being baffling with the wind, that they put that many men behind the ball that could only score 5 points with a gale force wind. And this was purely... Now, Mayo only got one, and it was from a free. So they absolutely contained Mayo. But if you're only scoring 5 with a gale force wind, you will not win any game. It's impossible. You won't do it. So Mayo were a lot more adventurous in the second half and got the win that they really did deserve. Roscommon didn't deserve anything from it, the way they set up. I'd have no problem Roscommon setting up that against the win, because you really have to batten down the hatches and you won't score the other end and keep the score low. But to do it with the wind, the mindset is just baffling. But one thing they didn't pick up on the analysis on the TV was Henley. Marco Shea made excuses for Henley. Henley, against the gale force wind, takes the ball and goes solo and across his own goal. Like, I mean, there's a mistake in that fella. Like, I mean, that was technically... I've played soccer, and you're told not to go across your goals. And you're actually told, if you back pass to the goalkeeper, back pass it to the side of the goal just in case the goalkeeper miskicks it and you roll it into your own. Like, these just basic principles of any sport. Do not run across your own goals. And he did it, and he nearly got caught rotten for it. Craig should have scored there.
He did. It would have been a completely bizarre goal for Mayo to concede. And it... I suppose, look, at Henley has probably... He has a little bit of history with these sort of errors, so it was unfortunate from a neutral spectator to see him make another one, but it was almost comical with the wind in the game, and he was a victim of it. There was plenty of players who tried to solo the ball that ended up going behind them. But it was a poor decision from him to go across the field. And in actual fact, I thought in the first half, even on his kickouts, I thought some of his decision making and what he was doing was a bit suspect in terms of putting his team under pressure. I think he kicked maybe three or four out over the sideline in the first half, where he was just trying to be a little bit too precise. And sometimes you have to take the conditions into account and put the ball out to a contest, because Mayo were doing reasonably well in those situations and they were just putting themselves under a little bit of pressure, sort of needlessly, I would have thought. But it is early doors, and I'm sure James Horan will knock that out of him.
Yeah, there's nothing. What do you think of Brian Reap? He scored an unbelievable goal. It was over carrying, but like, I mean, he got no real ball, but he's definitely worth another look. That's kind of what I
think. He should be allowed to over carry as long as a man's holding you. Like, you know, Enda Smith is just holding his arm with his two hands the whole time, so I think he should be allowed to keep going as long as you're being fouled.
That's called rugby, Conor.
Fair enough.
Well, like, I mean, I've never heard you so shut up in all my life.
No, but like, just like, it's the foul isn't in the game, you know. You're not allowed to foul, like,
rugby or Ulster football. Yeah. Okay,
fair point, well made, Conor.
But that's it, Brian Reap, we'll give him another go. I can kind of take your point, Conor. I kind of understand it. I'm not going to say any more about this because there's nothing you can read into just a terrible game like that.
It's very difficult. Like, Mayo retained possession and wore down the clock really in the first half. I can understand how Roscommon ended up getting dragged back the field because Mayo were playing such a, you know, retaining possession. But I would agree with you. I thought that they should have been a little bit more, I suppose, aggressive in where they drew the line in terms of their press. They did tend to fall back a little bit too much, and Mayo at their ease kind of always had a spare man at the back. I mean, the scoring zone was so small for Mayo that even if you pressed up right inside the Mayo half, there would have been plenty of time for bodies to get back and filter across
and cover
the scoring.
The wind
zone
was so strong. Yeah. You don't need a sweeper back there.
No,
like,
you don't.
Mayo
yeah.
can't kick the ball that far. It's impossible. They have to go through the hands. So anyways, that was just frustrating watching it with the wind. Just quickly on Kerry Tyrone, lads. Tyrone just will never change, lads. Like, if Tyrone didn't rip up their script when Dublin hammered him in 2017, they're definitely not going to rip it up this year after going a step further and arguably performing all right in the All-Ireland final and better than some people thought that they would. So we're going to see the same Tyrone. Tyrone got caught three times for sidelines going backwards. Like, isn't that just it's unsurprising when it comes to Tyrone, but it's just so kind of obvious that this team just don't want to be that positive in a lot of ways. Like, I mean, they're married to the way they play. So I'm picturing Kerry being pushed up on them, and instead of going 50-50, which they refused to do, they tried to go across field to Niall Morgan, who had come out, just trying to be clever all the time. And obviously it didn't go straight across like they wanted, and it went back, and that was the one they showed on TV last night. But they had two other ones in the game as well. Like, I mean, just very disappointing. So Tyrone didn't score. He just scored 2 points from play in the entire game. This was a strong Tyrone team. This wasn't any sort of a dummy team coming off taking the McKenna Cup pretty seriously, so they imagine to be fairly fit. Have their first choice half forward line, Matty Donnelly, Peter Hart, Niall Sludden, McShane in corner forward. So, like, they've Darren McCurry, who's on their starting team a lot of the time. Like, this is a Tiernan McCann, McNamee at full back, Hugh Pat McGeary. You have all these lads, Niall Morgan in goals, and they're going down to Kerry and they're scoring 2 points from playing an entire game. Now, apparently, I was asking somebody who was at the game, had Kerry gone back really defensively? Because I was thinking with Tyrone scoring that little, maybe this is a new Kerry, because Kerry conceded 10 goals in 7 games in last year's league, right? So they didn't concede a goal and didn't even look like they would, only 2 points from play. So Peter Kane said after the game, one of the difficult things to do, whether it's secret or not, is that defensively I want us hard to beat. So you have to start somewhere, and that's where you put your structure in and build from there. So the word I have is that they didn't play a full-time sweeper, but when the Tyrone half forward line went off back looking for ball, that two of the Kerry half back line held their positions, which is fair enough. So we know Tyrone struggle against that. Like, I mean, that's obvious, you know. It's when you follow them down and then Tyrone break you over and then break you down, and then they have you, if Tyrone turn you over anywhere around the 45 and you've tried to kind of have a bit of an attacking formation, Tyrone are just going to destroy you, and they'll do to you what they did to Roscommon and Cork. But if you play conservatively against Tyrone and Donegal and these defensive teams, they generally don't have much of an idea how to unpick these themselves, because they base their game so much around a counter-attack.
Yeah, they do. They base their game so much around ball carrying and a counter-attack that that they don't stretch the opposition. You know, they keep wit in their play, but it's always with runners. But if you have your half back line intact and you have your half forward line, your midfielders are doing the appropriate tracking of opponents and getting into the right zones defensively, I mean, that's really the way teams are gone. I mean, you have enough players back there to not really have much trouble because the ball is always in front of you. Where defenders are always... The danger for any defence is when the ball gets in behind your half back line and your defenders are facing their own goal. Defenders are always extremely comfortable when they have the opposition player in front of them. When they're always struggling when they're chasing back towards their own goal. And if you remove your half forward line from your attacking zone, you really never have a threat to the opposition because there's no link. The ball always has to be carried, and that's the way Tyrone are. And that's why they're not going to basically really be a threat again this year unless they have an ability to change that style, because they'll just come up short. They'll be very competitive, but they will just come up short again. And I would look at the names on their team sheet and the names on their panel and think that they do have enough stylish players. Again, it goes back to, is it just that they don't trust their defenders one-to-one or what? I don't know, but I can't, you know, to me, to make the step on, they should be trying to play a little bit more positively. And I thought it was really... I thought Tyrone were bankers to beat Kerry.
I did too.
This weekend, just with the form they had shown in the McKenna Cup and all that sort of thing, I just thought that they had a
shell of a
team.
A shell of a Kerry team, really. Yeah. When you look down to who they were missing, and like, I mean, this is the thing about Kerry. The word is like that they work like dogs. They tackle ferociously. So, like, I mean, maybe that's something that was missing from Kerry, that absolute streak. But that kind of tackling like dogs. And at the half forward line, especially around the middle third, you have to do that against Tyrone. You have to match these teams because that's what they bring. Mm. But this creates a new problem for Kerry in that if Kerry pick a working half forward line, well, there's so many great forwards to get into that forward line. Like,
well, if you look at that Kerry team, and I wouldn't be familiar with all their names in the attack, but if you were going down away to play Kerry in an away league match, you wouldn't be thinking the night before, Jesus, we're seriously under threat here if these boys cut loose on us, because the majority of their marquee forwards there, apart from Gainey, were missing and unavailable. So, I mean, I would have thought it was a day when Tyrone should have been, I suppose, backing themselves and backing their own ability and backing their own footballing ability and going a little bit more man to man and positive, but that's obviously not what they do.
Yeah, Jonathan Lyon played wing forward, and that might, like, he's a wing back, wing forward, so that'll be an indication in that they looked, maybe Keane's looking for one lad there that's, you know, really going to be that link man worker. Sean O'Shea, we know he has pure class, but he has size, and maybe he's out there working around. I think Stephen O'Brien,
he has a good appetite for work as well. O'Shea comes round well.
Stephen O'Brien was picked on the wing. He played in the forwards. Like, I mean, at some stages it was just Paul Gainey and Stephen O'Brien inside their own attacking side, according to my source. So, like, I mean, maybe this is a new Kerry here, and, like, I mean, Kerry continuously trying to play nice football. Dublin played nice football yesterday because Monaghan didn't go majorly defensive, but Kerry think they can play nice football against every team.
Yeah.
You can't play that kicking game. No, and Dublin know that. Dublin have two different games that they can easily use anytime they want, and that's why they're so brilliant. Kerry need to have that other game. I need to practice it.
Well, the thing about it is the Dublin players have a great appetite for work no matter what.
As well,
no matter what the number on their jersey is. I mean, Mannion was back in his own full back line picking up ball.
Again.
I mean, the Monaghan players do the same thing. Like, all the top teams do have that appetite for work. And maybe that's just a thing that I suppose the younger Kerry players coming through from minor, they obviously have loads and loads of ability. But maybe it's just that learning curve when they get to senior inter-county that the game doesn't always have a shape to it. The game can just get very hectic, and you know, you're playing against Monaghan, you're going to have to go after Ryan Wiley when he takes off up the field, or Kieran Duffy, or these guys, and that's just what you have to do because it needs to be done you know, in different spells of the game. So look, at the big thing for Kerry is that they have plenty of talent, and Keane has obviously seen what he wants to do, which is stop them conceding goals, and he'll be absolutely delighted first day out to concede 2 points from play and no goals.
Yeah,
like, he'll be delighted with that win.
Getting that balance between attack and defence, we talked about it all last year. A lot of teams struggle with it. Kerry struggled with it, and now maybe they'll start realising that if we're coming up against the Tyrone, we have to change. If we come up against Galway and Croke Park, we have to change. It becomes a battle. It becomes a middle third war of attrition. Then if we play Kildare, it's a lovely game. If we play Dublin, yeah, we can hit it's a lovely game. Like, I mean, I do think that they were tactically inflexible, maybe a little bit.
Tyrone's the same, only the other way.
Only the other way around. Yeah. But, like, I mean, I think these teams are together so often during the week. Now, I know it's difficult during the winter, but during the summer.
Yeah, because, like, Fitzmaurice, to be fair to him, like, he did match up against Donegal when they won the All-Ireland. You know, he did show flexibility, but I think that, look, you have to look at it and say, the players maybe just weren't, it wasn't their natural game. The players that he had at his disposal just weren't as comfortable trying to play a game that was a little bit alien to them because they were maybe older players.
And actually, it's funny you say that, because in around 2015, Kerry joined the league, had gone back to a defensive game. They flirted with it and it didn't, they swarmed the middle third, I remember, in a few league games, and maybe they Fitzmaurice went through this as well and came out saying that's not us either. So is only one game and one win against Tyrone.
A lot of players coming through from the underage ranks now have been used to playing, because of the whole evolution of the game in terms of teams playing very defensively and with loads of numbers back, these guys are used to playing in games like that from underage level, so it's not as much of a change to them as it is for guys who were mid-career
having to adapt
when all of these things happen. So they're maybe a little bit more comfortable in the mayhem of a game like that. So look, it's just hard to know. Like, Kerry just have so much talent at the minute that I think it's going to be very interesting to see how many of those guys can make the progression to be serious inter-county players, because it doesn't happen overnight. And obviously their manager has an exceptionally good record, and it's a learning curve for him. So he'll be more than happy to start off the season, I would say, giving them that sort of defensive solidity. And they won't care if they're not that slick up front until the end of the summer. You know, that's really, like, let's be realistic about it. That's what Kerry are looking at. They're looking, they'll win a Munster and they'll be into the Super 8s. And that's really when they'll like to have, they'll want to have their, how they play down to a tee by down. So they have a long time to get there.
Yeah, they do. Okay, up next we'll do Paddy Power performance of the weekend. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got,
because I don't want no 1 minute, man. Alright, Paddy Power performance of the weekend. So the first one up is Evan O'Carroll from Laois. He got 8 points. He was outstanding. There was 5 frees, I think a mark, and then 2 others from play. So, like, he's a big physical presence. Get him. He was injured last year for a lot of the year, and then his father passed away. So having him for a full year this year is going to be absolutely huge, huge plus for Laois if they can, because he's so flexible. He can play in the half forward line, he can play in the full forward line. And it was interesting reading John Sugrue's comments after the game. So he said he brought on Donny Kingston and Colin Begley at half time. Laois were 10-5 down at one stage, so I'm presumed there was obviously a wind in that, you don't know from these reports. We had to change things up because we weren't getting from down what we expected as to how to set things up. So that's part of it. You have to be able to adapt. The boys, to be fair to them, adapted really well, and went at down in the second half. So from the information I got from asking one of the players, and you can read between the lines there with John Sugrue anyways, because it was just confirming it, is that Paddy Talley didn't set down up. They at least thought they were going to face the likes of a Carlow or, you know, Fermanagh, and that wasn't the reality. So in the second half then, they were able to leave more lads in the full forward line because there wasn't the full time sweepers they imagined that there would be, and they were able to get more direct ball into them. So Donny gets in. They have a new lad. Should have mentioned him last Thursday, Colin Murphy. I played with his older brother, he's from Port Harlington, and this lad is top class. So Laois could potentially have a full forward line of Colin Murphy, Donny Kingston, Evan O'Carroll, or Evan O'Carroll in the half forward line running on to these two lads, because Murphy's a decent sized lad, both feet, just a really good young talent. That Laois, now I'm starting to think, not just based on this result, which is a fantastic result, but Laois are looking like a Division 2 team now. You know, when they have the Cater Healy, they've David Seal, Paul Catalan from Port Laois, they've all these Port Laois lads coming back into the mix, that are, Colin Boyle started at centre half forward yesterday, that weren't there last year. They're just a much stronger panel and a much better team. But, and even John Sugrue, again, tactically flexible. Laois have two ways of playing. When Laois play Carlow, they're much different than where Laois play down, for example, last night. Laois can mix it up. Now, they've learned that from Dublin, but at the same time they have two game plans based on who they're playing. They thought they were playing one last night, it turns out they didn't, so Sugrue changed it at half time. Like, I'm very, very impressed with Sugrue. That might seem very logical and simple speaking here, lads, but how many managers just don't really see that in game?
Yeah, Sugary's the man, and I'm glad we got the Leashire out of the way there.
What do you think, Keane?
I've been very impressed with Sugary. I know we were commenting a little bit on him last year and his challenging of Donny Kingston, why he wasn't in the team. But look, either way, they've moved beyond that, and he's developed different patterns of play. I've seen Leash on a number of occasions, and the ability to be able to change from playing against a sort of very defensive team like Carlow, as they did last year, and then to be able to come out and show a different side of their play when they played against Dublin, and more positive and more kicking and that. And it probably does suit the Leash players to be able to play that more sort of positive style of play. He's developing a squad as well, because I suppose to be down in Division 4, obviously it's not a good thing, but it has given them the ability to develop some players and give them experience. And now moving forward, they're into their second year, they're that bit stronger, and they have huge experience to call on with the likes of Begley and Donny Kingston, these guys who've played all through the division. So,
well, they'd start, and Garrett Dillon out wing back, I predicted that. He was in the corner last year, but he's a much better player. He plays wing forward for Port Leash. But I thought it was funny on Joe Brolly, and I have sympathy for Joe Brolly. You know when you have to throw out a soundbite about a team. So Brolly says about Leash, he says, "Leash are a team that's going places now. I saw Kilmacook Crokes were very lucky to beat Leash, or I mean Port Leash, in the Leinster Club semi-final, and Port Leash play a very attacking brand of football." Almost like Port Leash have been the second best team in Leinster for the last 10 years. Like, Kilmacook Crokes barely beating Port Leash is not a surprise. And how Port Leash play has no bearing on how Leash play. It just so happens that they both play an attacking brand of football. But, like, I mean, he's not to know what's going on with. But it's always funny when they're trying to round up at the end. What do you think of Leash there, Joe? They're going well.
Port Leash, the last thing I can remember about Leash is Port Leash.
But Down, actually, I saw a stat from Niall Mackay. Down starting team last night had 86 league appearances between them. That averages less than 6 per player. So this is a completely new Down team. So Paddy Talley called for patience ahead of the league, and he's dead right. That's what Niall Mackay tweeted. And that's absolutely... So Leash's win against them has to be put into the context of this Down. But still, I suppose to go away and beat them is just a great result regardless.
The way to Down is always a tricky game. But, I mean, that's the point we make, is just the difference in experience between the two teams. Leash were able to call on that and bring themselves from a losing position into a winning position. I don't think Down will be overly disappointed. Both teams will be obviously hoping to get back up to Division 2, but it's a very important 2 points for Leash to start, and keep that sort of momentum going.
Huge win. Now, just beat Loud in the Croke Park game next week. Ryan O'Rourke from Leitrim, lad, scored 2-7. So Ryan's only 21. I think he's on his third year. He was playing last year as well, so he's captain for his club. Their intermediate champions is Fenna. So supposed to be captain of your club at intermediate level at 21 years of age just shows what kind of a character we're talking about. Our own Paddy McKenna, a proud Leitrim man, in the office here said he's the best Leitrim forward since Pádraig Kenny. Do you remember Pádraig Kenny?
No.
94. I only remember Seamus Quinn and Declan Darcy, so that's me gone from Leitrim 94.
I'm the same.
So it says he was central to Leitrim's victory. This is from a match report. So it's alright saying 3-15, he scored 2-7, but he scored 6 of that 2-7 in the first half, where Wexford were way on top. So they scored, I think it was 7-6, we were saying at half time. So he got all of Leitrim's scores in the first half. That shows serious bottle. I'm sure there was a win there as well. 2-7 in all. Ryan O'Rourke, Leitrim Rising, keep your eye out for him.
Well, like, it's some shooting from him, but they also got 3-9 they got in the second half alone. And then you take into account that it looks like Keith Byrne, who was their top scorer and it looks like he's not going to be involved this year. Keith Byrne, like, he's gone, but then Ryan O'Rourke just steps up and already looks better. And we tipped him to get up, and it looks like they're going up.
Emran Mulligan as well, so that's a huge win, because Wexford, we were saying yesterday that Derry are going up, and then it's between Leitrim and Wexford, you imagine. Although it's a huge win for Leitrim, basically. David Tuberty, lads, he is an old man. Relatively young man, but old man in GA context. He was outstanding, apparently, according to the match report yesterday. Gary Brennan in midfield, as usual, got 3 from play. Jason McGee got 3 points from play from midfield for Donegal. So they could really do with him becoming a good dominant midfielder, because we know he burst onto the scene 2 years ago against Tyrone. Was it against Tyrone? He got, it was in a He was in a big game anyways, I can't remember. Maybe he was in the Ulster Championship. Oh, he was in a league game against bloody Kerry.
Yeah.
Away. Remember we were talking about him, I think it was your first show. This is all coming back to me now. But he was great, and then he went off the scene. He even dropped off the panel completely. But he showed, I think it was against bloody Dublin. Okay, we've got to narrow it down. I think it was against Dublin in the league. He was outstanding. And thinking he's a really big player. But they need a good dominant midfielder. They need it, and especially with Rochford, that'll give Murphy more time to get out of that midfield. Hugh McFadden's solid. So Jason McGee, so that's a big thing. But again, I read so many match reports of this match, and there was no insight into how Rochford has them setting up or any of his imprint, because I read, you see, a lot of them buy the same one off the same fella. So I read the GA website, and they had it from a fella called Derek Lynch, and then I read the 42, and it was the same Derek Lynch, and it was just a blow by blow in the second minute such and such happened. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, like, the Donegal Twitter account will give you that if you want. Just give us an idea of how maybe those two teams set up, or maybe the casual fan does not want that information, but I was desperate for it because I really want to see Donegal. That's why I want RTE to go to it next week, to see Rochford. Is nobody interested in what Rochford's doing with Donegal?
Yeah, how they're setting up,
yeah,
and what way the wind's blowing and everything. But like, do you know, I remember there's one game that I didn't cover, but I was supposed to cover when I was working back in Derry. But had a club game at the same time, so I went to that, obviously. But I just got the Derry Twitter account and the Tyrone Twitter account, and just was able to do a match report from that. If that's what you're doing, like point by point,
yeah,
you can do it, because somebody else is, like, you know, I'm not saying that future journalists should do that, but but, you know, but like, if you are doing a blow by blow, minute by minute, like, it's there for you. But if you're there, you're in a privileged position that you can tell people,
yeah,
something that they can't see.
I think so. I think maybe the style of match reports needs to change. Right, Stephen O'Hanlon, I see Keane looking at his watch here. Stephen O'Hanlon, and we have to think of our man in South America as well. Stephen O'Hanlon, right, he was outstanding yesterday, we'll all agree on that. Has a great bit of fire in his belly, a great bit of cutting in him, caught that ball over his head and could easily have gone for a mark, but he's a left footer, and maybe he was thinking mid-air, right, I better not call a mark here because I'm on my wrong side. But he just continued on, got a lovely angle for himself and stuck it away. He has left a promising basketball career behind him, according to Kevin O'Brien, journalist. He said he's an ex-Ireland under 21 player to link up with Monaghan, and we saw him in the build up to Carey's goal, like a nice bit of awareness to pass that off. Basketball players don't get kind of shocked when they're given a ball right in front of goals. They know to lay it off or score. We know that from Donaghy, Aidan O'Shea, these lads, lovely hands. His first two touches, he got a goal and assist. But it was just his general play. And with Jack McCarron, with this offensive mark, put Jack out in the half forward line, because he flatters to deceive in the full forward line anyways, especially in the big games in the championship. Let him float a few off the outside of his boot for McManus and for Stephen O'Hanlon. And again, there you go, Monaghan. That's your trio. But the mark isn't in for the championship.
Yeah, Stevie O'Hanlon's actually the son of Eugene O'Hanlon as well, played in
the great Eugene.
Yeah, the great 1985 Ulster winning Monaghan team, who played Kerry in the semi final. But so he's got a bit of breeding in him too.
Jeez, he's breeding, he's cutting. What was it Keane says earlier on? He's pawing at him, and then he saw what did you say Howard was doing?
Swanning around.
Oh, we have a few right ones coming out here. So we'll give you a shout on Meade. Sean O'Shea is the other one I have down here, but we talked about Kerry. Mickey Newman and Killian O'Sullivan. Mickey Newman's back. He only got one from play, but according to the match reports I read, was very good. You were at this match. Killian O'Sullivan came on at half time, and once again, he has that cutting in him and that bit of fire in his belly that, especially at this time of the year, just kind of really makes you stand out.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he came on at half time and added a bit of sort of a little bit of drive to the half forward line in terms of taking defenders on and driving into the gap and that sort of stuff. Won a couple of frees. Mickey Newman got a lovely point from play in the first half. Club mate of mine, Thomas O'Reilly, was in the other corner, got two from play. So, you know, those three guys, Meade would be looking to have a reasonable league campaign. They'll need those guys playing well. Killian O'Sullivan only came on for the second half. I think he'd been carrying an injury. So he definitely made a difference to Meade. And look, it wasn't a great game of football. Tipperary were missing a number of players, and it was a crucial win for Meade. And they got a couple of guys back into action. Graham Riley came on for the last maybe 10 or 15 minutes, kicked a point. So Meade will be delighted. It was a massive, massive game for Meade. They really, really badly needed to get the 2 points on the board in a home game against a depleted Tipperary team, and they did enough.
They made hard work of it, though, did they?
Yeah, look, they did make hard work of it. They carry the ball an awful lot. That's kind of the style of play. It's the players that are on the field. I would obviously much prefer to see them lifting their head a bit earlier in the attack and moving the ball by the foot from the middle third of the field. But look, at 2 points on the board, can't really ask for much more than that at this stage of the season.
You wouldn't be enthusiastic about, like, Meath are not going to go up, not with Donegal and Kildare in it.
I'm retaining hope just because they have a number of games at home. They're away games, with the exception, I mean, they're away to Cork, and I think they're away to Clare or Kildare, so they don't have. Donegal is the difficult away match, which I wouldn't expect them to get much from. But they've 4 games at home, and they'll certainly be looking to win all of them. The Armagh game, Armagh and Kildare games are kind of the big ones for me. They need to do their job and beat Clare and Fermanagh and Cork, who they should, you know, they've beaten all of those teams in recent seasons, so they should be able to beat them again, particularly when they've 2 of them in home matches. So I wouldn't be writing Meath off in terms of promotion just yet, but they would certainly have to improve from their opening performance.
Yeah, okay, exactly. And we didn't get a chance to talk about Armagh Kildare. That was meant to be a brilliant game, as we predicted it would be, and Jimmy Hyland got a late point, so we all keep our eye out for him. I was looking through the Kildare team and did a lot of new faces on it. It wasn't a strong Kildare team based off the championship team last year. And I was reading somewhere on Twitter that 7 of their subs had never played in the league.
Yeah, but like it's unbelievable for Kildare, because they had to arrest the slide of, I know they had, you know, reasonably decent championship campaign, but their league form was, you know, dreadful, so they needed to be able to just stop the slide of losing matches, and to be able to pull a draw out of it against Armagh when they were in a losing position with a very inexperienced team. I'm sure Keane O'Neill was delighted with that, but they will obviously need to improve, and they will. Armagh and Kildare are probably the two teams that you would have as favourites, along with Donegal, to go up, really.
Yeah, Jarlett Byrne's son was full forward, picked full forward for Armagh, and I was listening to Kieran McGeaney on
Radio 1. Picked full forward and played cornerback, probably.
I was listening to Kieran McGeaney being interviewed on Radio 1, and the reporter says to McGeaney, and we had the son of Armagh legend Jarlett Byrne's son in a full forward. Well, I wouldn't be going saying Jarlett Byrne's is any sort of a legend now or anything, Geezer says, but his son could potentially be a legend.
Jesus.
I thought it was a classic. You wouldn't know what McGeaney, whether he's being serious or whether he's actually trying to lynch Jarlett. But we keep our eye out for Jarlett's
son. It's great to be back, isn't it?
That's great to be back, Les. Listen, brilliant. We've gone over time as per usual. We'll leave it there, and we'll be back on Thursday, where Matty Ford is going to be making his debut. Talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.